Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
We're continuing our study in 2 Kings. We're going to try to be doing about 2 1/3 chapters today. The reason we're taking so much, this is going to be a difficult lesson to teach for several reasons. We're going to try to be covering a lot of kings, and unfortunately, we're going to be covering kings in the northern 10 tribes of Israel and the southern 2 tribes of Judah. It's going to be very confusing unless you have a chalkboard where you can put something of an outline up of these kings. I have a graphic I want to show you that outlines what we're going to do. It's also on your printed material. This graphic will help you to kind of see the flow of where we're going. Notice, if you would, then, we're going to be dealing with the kings of Israel in first. Jeroboam the second is going to be in chapters 14, verses 23 through 27. Zechariah is going to be in chapter 15, verses 8 through 12. Shallum in chapter 15, verses 13 and 15. Menahem in chapter 15, verse 14, then 16 through 23. And you'll see the rest of these down through your outline. We're going to be jumping back and forth during this lesson, so it's very important you see these and the dates. I have put these dates in here for you, and I want to say to you right off the bat, these are tentative. There is a real problem of chronology in these historical books. And basically, they're of two different kinds. Number one, we're not sure of the ascension date. There is an Eastern way of counting it and a Western way, and these historical books sometimes flip-flop between. Secondly, some of these Hebrew texts have been corrupted, and the number problems through here are horrendous. I do not think a Sunday school class needs to get into all these technical number problems, but they are really in here. Let's look then at 2 Kings chapter 14, beginning in verse 23, and we'll start going through these kings. All right. Now, in the 15th year of Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah. So notice we're starting in the southern kingdom, okay? Jeroboam the second, son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria. Now we're going to the northern. What this is doing is it dates the southern king by who is on the throne in the north, and it dates the northern king by who is on the throne in the south. Now, don't be confused. This Jeroboam here in verse 23 is Jeroboam the second. Now, it'd be very good for you to write in your Bible in verse chapter 14, 23, Jeroboam the second. Put Roman numeral 2 behind his name. Because in verse 24, it's going to be Jeroboam the first, son of Nebat. And so if you put that in your Bible, it'll help you not get these two Jeroboams confused. Okay, Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel, became king in Samaria. Remember Samaria, and I want to show you on the map where that is, if you'll look with me. Samaria is this northern capital. You see Damascus? Well, if we go to the south, it's not on this big map, but it's right about there. It's the hill of Samaria. Now, the Judah, the capital is Jerusalem, but in the northern Israel, it's right about there, okay? Samaria. Now, the reason that's important is under the dynasty of Omri is when this capital was established. Omri was a very powerful dynasty. It's in many of the ancient records. The next most prosperous ruler that the northern 10 tribes ever had is Jeroboam the second. Now, I want to tell you, this was a prosperous day. It was a day of great wealth and opulence and luxury. Now, there are two prophets that spoke to this age. And if you want to get the full picture of this, you need to look at the books of Amos and Hosea. And they tell us that in the midst of all this luxury, there was a moral decay, a sickening spiritual condition. Though physically, it was a very prosperous day. There had never been a time like this in northern Israel since the days of Solomon. Jeroboam II was a very effective, stable leader. Notice his reign is 41 years. Now, Josephus says 40 years, but here the account says 41. Now, that is a very stable reign, because we're going to find very soon there's going to be 5 kings in a very relatively short period of time. The northern kingdom is going to be very unstable after Jeroboam II. Okay? Now, notice in verse 24 it says, "And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat." Now, that's Jeroboam the first. Now, let's think back here. There's a lot of history in this thing. Jeroboam the first is the Ephraimitic labor leader that causes the northern 10 tribes to rebel against Solomon's impudent son, Rehoboam. And that happened in 922 B.C. is when the kingdom split. Rehoboam, okay, Solomon's son, and then Jeroboam, who is a northern labor leader from the tribe of Ephraim. Now, that's who Jeroboam, son of Nebat, is, which made Israel sin. And all the way through here, we're going to have a very unpopular designation for these northern kings. Let me tell you what. This is a perfect example of the kind of history that Kings and Chronicles, and really Samuel, Kings and Chronicles is. It is a theological history. It is not a complete history. Many of these great events, like the reign of Jeroboam II, many important things happened, are not included in Kings. Now, some of the things are included in Chronicles. It's going to be real important that you look in your reference Bible and look up the parallel passage in 2 Chronicles and make sure when you read Kings, you read 2 Chronicles, because they really complement each other. But still, they are a theological, selective history. Now, the reason it's going to say he did evil in the sight of the Lord, this is a reference to the golden calves that Jeroboam the First set up in the north of his kingdom and the south, Dan and Bethel. He did not want his people going to Jerusalem, so he set up alternate worship sites. Now, these were a symbol of Yahweh, just like Aaron's calf in the wilderness. That was not an idol. It was an idol. It wasn't a foreign god. That young bull was a symbol of Yahweh, and the same is true here, these golden calves. But that's exactly what God condemns them for throughout these kings. Now, and he did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not depart from all the sins of Jeroboam the First. That's that idol worship. He restored the border of Israel from the entrance of Hamath as far as the Sea of Arabah. Let's go to the map again. If you'll notice what we have here, this northern, right under Tyre, this is the area of the entrance of Hamath. Now, when it says the Sea of the Arabah, this is the southern end of the Dead Sea. This is the Arabah here. And so the Sea of the Arabah must be the Dead Sea. Now, let me give you a few references on this entrance of Hamath being the northern boundary of the Promised Land. Numbers 38:8, Joshua 13:5, Judges 3:3, and 1 Kings 8:65 are many references to the northern extremities of the Promised Land. Okay? According to the word of the Lord, the God of Israel, which he spoke through his servant Jonah, son of Amittai. Now, this is the book of Jonah, the same guy. Look at Jonah, the little prophet, chapter 1, verse 1. It's the same father. So we know from this that Jonah was a prophet to the northern kingdom. Now, you remember the beginning of the book of Jonah, he was to preach to Nineveh. Nineveh is the capital of the Assyrian Empire. And so we're in a general time frame now of when Jonah's ministry was. Now, look at verse 26. For the Lord saw the affliction of Israel, which was very bitter, and there was neither bond nor free, nor was there any helper in Israel. And the Lord did not say that he would blot out the name of Israel from under heaven, but he saved them by the hand of Jeroboam, son of Joash. Now, this is the theological reason for the success of Jeroboam the Second. And remember, this author is looking at this and seeing God as the force behind the prosperity of this king. Now, look at verse 28. Now, the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did, and his might and how he fought and how he recovered for Israel, Damascus and Hamath. Now, we're not sure. Damascus, of course, is the capital of the powerful northern neighbor of Israel, Syria. Now, whether Israel actually captured this capital or whether it just took some land from the kingdom of Syria is not certain. And the same as Hamath. We learn later it's an independent nation also to the north, more on the Mediterranean coast. But whether these two capitals are conquered or just part of their land is taken back is not sure. Now, notice in verse 29, and Jeroboam, that's Jeroboam the Second, slept with his fathers, even with the kings of Israel, and Zechariah his son became king in his place. Now, if you'll turn back to 2 Kings 10:30, this fulfills the prophecy given to Jehu that four generations of his son will sit on the throne. And you ought to see that down in chapter 15, verses 8 through 12. It talks about this even more. Okay? Now, we're going to switch to another kingdom here. In the 27th year of Jeroboam the Second, king of Israel, Azariah, son of Amaziah, king of Judah, became king. Now, you know this man by another name. If you'll look down at verse 13, you'll see his other name, Uzziah. In Isaiah chapter 6, this is where Uzziah died, the year that Isaiah was called. Now, Uzziah, you must look at 2 Chronicles 26 to get the full picture of Uzziah's reign. He was a very good king, and we've flip-flopped back to Judah. He was 16 years old when he became king, and he reigned 52 years in Jerusalem, and his mother's name was Jecolah, of Jerusalem. Now, Josephus gives her a different name, but he also records this exact date. 16 years he ascended the throne, and he reigned 52 years. And he did right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Okay? Only the high places were not taken away, and the people still sacrificed and burnt incense on the high places. Now, these high places were local shrines up on the top of hills, so they'd be close to heaven. And what they were, if you look at the book of Judges, there's these local shrines all over the promised land. They were originally Canaanite shrines, but when the people of Israel came in, they took them over to worship Yahweh. And God appeared in many of these places. And it is not condemned in Judges, but it's later condemned because just like they were originally Canaanite, then they became Yahwistic, and slowly through the amalgamation with the fertility cults, they became fertility cult worship centers again. And that's what's happening. It's an idolatry with the fertility cults of that day. Now, notice if you would, in verse 5. And the Lord struck the king. Now, you've got to read 2 Chronicles 26, verses 16 through 18 to find out exactly what happened. Uzziah was a good king, but he became proud. And he tried to offer incense himself. That was the responsibility of the priest, not the king. And God saw his presumption, his impudence, and struck him with leprosy on the spot. And you have to read 2 Kings 26. Now, he was a leper to the day of his death. This may be some of the background how leprosy was considered a theological disease given by God to inflict someone who had done evil. Now, let's see. He lived in a separate house while Jotham, the king's son, was over the household judging the people of the land. But this Jotham is co-regent with his fathers for many years. Something as many as 8 years. From 750 to 742, Jotham was co-regent because his father was a leper and could not be in the palace and could not hold daily court. So his father lived in a separate house, but still ran the empire. Now, Uzziah was as successful and as prosperous as Jeroboam II. And the prophets during this time would be Isaiah. This whole setting we see from the book of Isaiah so beautifully. So Isaiah and Micah are the prophets of the southern two tribes during this period. Okay? Let's see. Now, the rest of the acts of Azariah and all that he did, are they not written in the book of Chronicles, the king of Judah? And Azariah slept with his fathers, and they buried him with his fathers in the city of David. Now, from 2 Chronicles 26:23, we learn that he was buried close to the fathers, but not in the same tomb because he was a leper. In the 38th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Zechariah, son of Jeroboam II, became king over Israel in Samaria for 6 months. Now, Zechariah means Yahweh remembers. And so, Zechariah is only going to be on the throne 6 months. Think of that. He did evil in the sight of the Lord as his fathers had done, which means he left the golden calves. He did not depart from the sins of Jeroboam I, the son of Nebat, which made Israel sin. Then Shalom, the son of Jebush, conspired against him and struck him before the people. It's a very unusual Hebrew phrase here. It means probably a public execution, maybe in the temple, maybe in a public parade, I don't know what, but before the people, killed him and reigned in his place. Now Shalom is only going to reign 30 days before he is killed by many him. And so here we had this rapid succession of conspiracy and murders. The political scene of the northern 10 tribes during this time is in great confusion. Okay? Look at verse 13. Shalom became king in the 39th year of Uzziah, king of Judah. He reigned 1 month in Samaria. He was in the capital city. Then Menahem, son of Gadi, went from Tirzah. Now, Josephus tells us that Menahem was the general of the army. And so he was in another city. And he heard about the coup, and he took the army, and he's going to become king. He's going to kill Shalom, and he's going to become king. All right? Now, the rest of the acts of Shalom and his conspiracy, which he made, behold, are they not written in the book of Chronicles, king of Israel? Then Menahem struck Tishah. Now, I want to show you that. Let's look at the map again, if we could. This is way up here on the Euphrates River. Look how this is the Euphrates River. Now, Israel is way down here under Damascus. Look how far that is. So many people say this can't be the exact site. This is the only one in the Bible by this name. So I think it shows the power and military prestige of Menahem in his day and how Damascus could have fallen and Hamath could have fallen to Israel in that time. Now, let's see. Lost my place. Okay, notice what happened. Verse 16 is a tragedy of how a city loyal to Shalom was brutally ravaged by the new king. Women who were pregnant were ripped. It was unbelievable. It was right what they did in their day, but for us it's unbelievable. Now look at verse 17, another king. In the 39th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Menahem, son of Gadi, became king over Israel and reigned 10 years in Samaria. That's a pretty long reign compared to 6 months and 1 month. So he brought some stability. And he did evil on the side of the Lord because he kept those golden calves. Look at verse 19. Pul, king of Assyria. Now we learn from Babylonian records that Pul is the Babylonian throne name for the king of Assyria that you probably know better as Tiglath-Pileser III. Now, when he defeated Babylon, he took the Babylonian throne, and they called him Pul, and that's what he's called in the Bible. Now, Assyria, for most of this period, has been very weak and disoriented, but Tiglath-Pileser had an 18-year reign, very effective, very powerful, and he made Assyria the empire of the Fertile Crescent, okay? And you'll see all the talents of silver. He made Menahem give in tribute. I'm not going to go through all that. You can read that. Let me give you a few dates. In 743... he received tribute from Rezin of Damascus, 743 B.C. In 739, he received tribute from Menahem. That's what we have recorded here in chapter 15. In 734, this same Tiglath-Pileser moved down the coast of the Mediterranean through the empires of Phoenicia and Philistia. So there are different campaigns where we're continually moving south now, taking tribute from each of these little monarchies. All right? Look at verse 23. There's a 2-year interval between Menahem and Pekahiah. Now, maybe there had to be approval from the Assyrian monarch. We just don't know. In the 50th year of Azariah, king of Judah, Pekahiah, which means Yahweh has opened, son of Menahem, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 2 years. And he did evil on the side of the Lord. You see the same theme. Judah does right, Israel does wrong because of the golden calves. Notice the conspiracy down in verse 25 when Pekah, son of Remaliah, kills him. More conspiracy, more problems. Let's skip down to verse 27. In the 52nd year of Azariah, that's Uzziah, king of Judah, Pekah, son of Remaliah, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 20 years. Now this date has really caused problems. Most modern scholars change the word 20 to the word 5. Not for textual reasons, but for historical chronological reasons to help the Babylonian and Assyrian documents fit the biblical record. There is a real problem of numbers through here that cannot be solved by any fast footwork. It just here is a problem. Let's see. Verse 29. In the days of Pekah, king of Israel, Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, came, that's Tiglath-Pileser III, and captured. Now you look at these names. Ijon, Abel, Beth, Makkah, Janoah, Kadesh, Hazar, Gilead, Galilee, and all the land of Naphtali, and he carried them captive to Assyria. Now all of these are areas in northern Israel. Let's look at the map for a minute. This is the Sea of Galilee. I'm using the map of the Babylonian Empire. This is the Sea of Galilee. So all of this whole area around here was captured and taken into captivity by Tiglath-Pileser III. Okay? They're gone into captivity. And Hoshea, son of Elath, made a conspiracy against Pekah, son of Remaliah, and struck him and put him to death, and became king in his place in the 20th year of Jotham, son of Uzziah. Now, let me show you how the problem here, the contradictions. If you'll look at verse 33, it says that Jotham reigned, 16 years. But here in verse 30, it says, in the 20th year of Jotham. So we don't know if there's an overlapping of co-regency or what exactly is happening here. There's just some number problems through here. Now I want to skip down and see to... look at verse 35. Only the high places were not taken away. The people still sacrificed and burned incense in the high places. He built the upper gate of the house of the Lord. There was a lot of building in Jotham's time. If you'll see 2 Chronicles 27:3, you'll see a list of all the construction he did. Notice verse 37. In those days, the Lord began to send Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, against Judah. There is going to be an alliance developed between Syria, Israel, and they want Judah to join in. Judah's even stronger than Israel at this time. They want these three nations to rebel against Tiglath-Pileser, or Syria. Judah will not do it. So Syria and Israel attack Judah. And we'll see that whole battle down here in about, verses 7 and 8. Okay? Let's go to chapter 16. Now, to understand 2 Kings 16, you must read 2 Chronicles 28. Okay? Must. This is going to set the stage for Isaiah chapter 7, verse 14's wonderful prophecy about a virgin will conceive, all right? In the 17th year of Pekah, son of Remaliah, Ahaz. Now, Ahaz is an unusual name. We learn from Assyrian records that his name was probably Jehoahaz, J-E-H-O, the covenant name for God, dash Ahaz. But it's never recorded that way in the Bible. Son of Jotham, king of Judah, became king. It's one of the most, worst kings that Judah ever had. It's unbelievable. Ahaz was 20 years old. He became king. He reigned 16 years in Jerusalem. He did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord his God. That's the first time for a southern king that's been brought in. Then four things are mentioned that he did to bring God's wrath. He didn't, as his father David had done, which means he did not walk as his father David had done, his grandfather, ancestor. He walked in the way of the kings of Israel, which means that he was an idolater. He made his sons pass through the fire, which is a reference to offering one's children to a fire god, a Canaanite, originally Phoenician fire god named Molech. And you might want to see 2 Chronicles 28:3. This was done in Canaan when the children of Israel entered the land. Let me give you a few references where this ungodly act in the Valley of Hinnom is so hated by the Jews. Leviticus 18:21, Deuteronomy 12:31, Deuteronomy 18:9 and 10. Molech. If you have a Bible dictionary, look up Molech, and you'll see exactly what was happening as they worshiped this fire god, this Canaanite deity, by offering their children, apparently alive, in sacrifice. Now, and then number four, he burned incense on the high places, on the hills, under every green tree. Not only did this king allow the high place to stand, he went out there and practiced this idolatry with them. Now, in the book of Hosea, we realize, under every green tree, this was a fertility cult. They were making love to everybody, and they did it under the trees so they wouldn't get sunburned. Everywhere there was a grove of trees, there was this fertility rite. You ought to read the book of Hosea. It just rails against this kind of thing over and over. let's see. Okay. Let me skip down here some. By the way, verse 5 is where this Syro-Ephraimatic coalition or war is spoken of again. It lasted 734 to 733. You ought to see 2 Chronicles 28, 8 through 15, and Isaiah 7 will give you the background. At that time, Rezin, king of Syria, recovered Elath. Now, I want to show you the map again because you're not going to believe what this thing is unless you have a map in your Bible. Remember, here is Damascus. This is where Rezin is capital, okay? Now, this is Israel, and this is Judah. You've got to go all the way down, past the Dead Sea, past Petra, all the way to the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aqaba, and there is Elath. That is the southern trade port for Solomon's empire. Look how far that man's influence goes. Well, that's astonishing that he had that much influence. Notice here in verse 6. It mentions, and the Syrians came to Elath and have lived there to this day. Many other manuscripts have the term Edomites, and that seems better because this is an area of the nation of Edom. And for Syria to have control that far away from their home is really impossible. So I think Edomites is a better translation there. Now here we have Tiglath-Pileser again in verse 7. If you know Isaiah chapter 7, you'll realize what happened is he was to turn to God, but he didn't trust God. So what he did, he called on Assyria to help him against Israel and Syria. And Isaiah just said, don't do it. God will protect you. Don't do it. But he did it anyway. He had to pay tribute. Now look at verse 10. King Ahaz is going to change some of the objects of the temple. He's going to do this apparently from Assyrian influence, and it was a way of appeasing the Assyrian gods. He's going to change the altar. He's going to change the laver. He's going to destroy some of Solomon's furniture. It's really unbelievable what this king did. I'm running out of time. Let's go to verse 17. Then Ahaz cut off the borders of the stands. Now, y'all see 1 Kings 7:27 and following for the stands. And removed the laver from them. He also took down the sea from the bronze oxen on which it was on. Look at 1 Kings 7:25. And he put it on the pavement of stone. Look at verse 18. And covered the way for the Sabbath. Now, the Septuagint has the foundation of the seat. Now, what this probably was a special platform that the king stood on during special holy days, made of some kind of precious metal, and the king took that for tribute. He changed everything up in that outer temple court and made it like Assyrian temples. Boy. In verse 20 it says, "And Ahaz slept with his fathers and was buried with his fathers in the city of David, and his son Hezekiah reigned in his place." Now Hezekiah is a good king, and that starts later on in the book. Now again, let me just say to you, I want to go back to that opening graphic if we could, because I think it's going to be so hard to follow this unless you catch the overall picture. We've just gone like a machine gun, bang, 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 through several kings here for over 70 years. So let's look at that graphic. You need to keep this in mind, what we're doing. It may be easy for you to graph it this way, kings of Israel, kings of Judah. It may be easier for you to go through the chapters, because we're going to flip-flop from Israel to Judah, and the verses will be on there. But you need to get a history book, some introduction to the Old Testament, be it John Bright's History of Israel, or any book like that, Edersheim's Bible History, Harrison's Introduction to the Old Testament, some book that you're going to be able to get the flavor of the history, what's happening, the flow of history, and from there you can build what the Holy Spirit leads you to teach your class. I've enjoyed being with you. I hope the outline is going to be helpful. You need a map in your classroom to show these different places. You need the outline on the chalkboard. You're going to need some historical background. I hope I've given you most of what you need. I've enjoyed being with you. God bless you.